Stephanie, would you like to call the roll? She's not here. Oh, yes, she is. Here. Thank you, Stephanie. This evening, we have Ms. Marge Bristow and Mr. Kenneth Ivy to do the gambling addiction presentation. So with respect to your schedule, if it's okay, we'll just put everything on the back burner and let you do your presentation first. Is that okay?
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay. Peter will do all the official introductions.
Well, I'm going to introduce also we have Bill Johnson, who is with the Illinois Council on Problem Gambling, and who will introduce the speakers. I think that we just had a two-hour training for the providers in our community, and it was well attended and was really good. And one of the things that I learned is that the problem gambling is an insidious disease that really is there's a comorbidity factor. It's tied into a variety of things that you're going to hear about. So it's very important that our providers are aware of it to the extent that they can be and take it into account. I mean, it also includes things like domestic violence. That also plays into domestic violence. So without further ado, I'm going to introduce Bill Johnson, who is the administrator.
Thanks.
And he will then do the introduction.
Thank you. Thank you again to Peter for inviting us to do the training today. It was very well attended, and I've reviewed the evaluations were excellent, so we're pleased that the folks learned something. They seem to have learned something. We're the Illinois Council on Problem Gambling. They'll, in their presentation, they'll be giving an overview of it. We're a private non-for-profit, and we're Margot Bristow and Ken Ivy are members of our board of directors. Margot is nationally, if not internationally, recognized as one of the experts in problem disorder gambling and treatment in families, adolescents especially. She is well versed. Ken Ivy is employed at Haymarket Center. He's also a trainer, has trained around the state. The issue of gambling disorders, and those of you who may or may not know, and I imagine they'll talk a little about it, they may not, but in the DSM-5, which is the Diagnostic Statistical Manual 5, which just was published, which is kind of the guideline, if I may, or the roadmap for how they do diagnosis and identifying people with problems, it just added gambling disorder in the addiction area of that manual. So again, without me holding up much longer, we're going to be brief and try to have time for questions if you'd like. So I'd like to introduce Margot and Ken.
Thank you very much. Do I need to record, or is it okay if I stand and present?
Stand and present.
Okay. I am a walker, and so it's a little bit easier, and I find it a little bit more engaging. Thank you again for inviting us to be part of this, and I know this is precious time. So we're going to try to encapsulate and be brief with the presentation. Just to give you a little bit about me, I've been in the field for over 25, closer to 30 years, working in mental health, and been working with gamblers for about 25 years. And I specialize in working with teens and young adults. I'm now in private practice, and I teach at this university, but I was a manager for a couple of community-based ag agencies where I ran in-base offices for child welfare, domestic violence,
I've been in the mental health field for 7 years. A pathological or disordered gambling counselor for 3. I'm currently at Haymarket, clinical supervisor of the adolescent unit.
Hey, minorities. And some of them are buying them habitually and addictively to the point that they're spending a lot of their daily money in lottery tickets, chasing it their money. And it's all part of the numbers game that many people get indoctrinated very early in life. I have helped a lot of families that give lottery tickets in Christmas presents and stockings because they can't afford other gifts. And if that person scratches it off, and that person may be 4, 5, 6 years old, they get to win that money, and that's a phenomenal gift. And so they have that excitement of scratching a lottery ticket. It starts at very young age. The Illinois Council is a not-for-profit organization, and we're a 501c3 organization, just to let you know. So our purpose is really working with the state and with education and prevention. We want to increase public awareness of problem gambling, and we're here. Thank you so much for letting us be here. We provide information and resources for gamblers and their families. We are looking at promoting more and more research. We have one of the top researchers in the nation that has just moved into Illinois and is working in Illinois, Dr. John Grant, and he's been a wonderful wealth of knowledge at this point for us. And we want to develop and implement problem gambling education throughout the state as much as possible, offering it to agencies. And we're an affiliate of the National Council of Problem Gambling. Our funding sources are through membership and donations. We receive no federal or state funding for our agency. So we get a lot of money through self-exclusion funds, and that's where gamblers that know that they have a problem will go into a casino or go into an agency that is providing gambling treatment, and they will self-exclude themselves. So if they go onto a boat, or if they go into a venue that is part of the self-exclusion area, they sacrifice all the money that they win, and they will get arrested for trespassing. They can pick one of three agencies at this point for their money that they want to be going into. And we are one of the beneficiaries of that. It's a double-edged sword. It's a piece that's very painful for us to accept those money, because we know that someone was in a lot of pain getting that money, but it is helping us with the purpose of educating families and the rest of the self. We are not anti-gaming, anti-gambling. We're gambling neutral. Whether people are gambling or not, it's not what we stand for. But we want people to know what gambling does to families and to our residents. And I covered the last one. What is gambling? Disordered gambling. DSM-5 just changed the terminology from compulsive gambling, or pathological gambling, to disordered gambling. Disordered gambling is primary chronic maladaptive coping mechanism with environmental psychological factors, aggressive debilitating, impaired control, there's preoccupation, continued involvement. The one thing that makes it different from substance abuse is the chasing of losses. That when someone is gambling and they're gambling addictively, that they're chasing the money, good money after that, and they keep on putting it in there without any consideration of how much they're losing. I know that we have quite a few clinicians on the board, am I correct? Can I ask you who my clinicians are? Okay. If you all work, how many of you work with addictions in your agencies?
This is the board. This isn't necessarily agency group.
Okay, then I'm sorry. Thank you. Okay. So how many of you have worked with addictions in your lifetime and have been exposed to addiction? Everyone's got to be raising their hands.
Yeah.
Because 1 in 4 people in this country is addicted, has suffered from some kind of addiction. Out of those 1 in 4 people, 1 in 10 will be a man-made addict. So thank you for the clarification, I appreciate that. Gambling behavior, and can please.
No, go ahead. We're pressed for time.
Gambling
we're good.
Behavior significantly disrupts everyone's life. And what we mean by that is that because it's progressive, because there is a primary maladaptive, and it's progressive and debilitating. What we mean by progressive and debilitating is when someone first gambles, they may gamble $10, $20, and that's it. But the next time they go, they may be gambling a little bit more. And maybe the 50th time they go, they're gambling 3-4 times the amount. And it gets more and more progressive. It debilitates their life, destroying emotional, psychological function, as well because of the gambler himself. Because the gambler will not get help. The family members are seeking. Gambling disorder. Some of them will piece. It's hidden. You can't smell it. Some of the ways to assess it, there are tools out there that are free tools that are used very easily. They can be incorporated into assessment tools that agencies use. One of the SODs, the SOD RA, and I was speaking to a gentleman about what that is. And the SODs and the SODs RA are Southwest Standing Stream. They are administered and given to the client. The staff members don't have to do anything. Given to the client upon intake, they fill it out. It's a screening tool that at that point, the staff member can look and say, this is an issue, this is not an issue. There's one that's supposed to be associated with the DSM-5 and DSM-4. It's the NOD or the NORC. The official name is the NORC, but we call it the NOD. I'm not sure why. It's a 2 or 3 page questionnaire that has a key to it that's very easy to administer. It takes about 10 minutes to administer it in an evaluation. And then the easiest one to do is the LIDET. It's 2 questions that are added on to assessment tools. The first one is, have you ever lied about your gambling? The second one, have you ever bet more than you expected to? And that's the one that you hope that most agencies will add on to their assessments so you can get more treatment out there for the gamblers. And then, of course, the classic clinical assessment that staff members do with their agencies. Resources out there for gambling are not as heavy or as high as we thought they were. There are about 15 funded agencies in the state of Illinois at present. Those 15 funded agencies do get money through the lottery months. And they're in the drawdown process where they're given a certain amount of money and they can pull from that for treatment. What the problem is that it's not all encompassing that it needs to be throughout the state. So there are a lot of gamblers that don't get because they're not aware of the agencies that are out there. They can reach out to GAMNON and GA. GA is Gamblers Anonymous. GAMNON is for the family members. The 1-800 Gambler, which is a nationally run hotline number that is given to hotline, it's our number for the Illinois Council of Public Gambling. And we do have an agency that is screened 24/7 and we can get resources throughout the day. We need to be bilingual. So anyone can call into it at any time. The 1-800-522-4700 number is the national hotline. So let's say you're out of the state. They can call the gambler number or the 522-4700 and we'll get the exact same answering service that not answering service, the same person online that they'll get from the 1-800 gambler. They'll get from 4700 number. And then they can reach out to the online counselor. One, give you a quick synopsis of some of the comorbidity, the co-occurring illnesses that happen with gamblers with mental health issues. And the biggest ones that we're screening for are the mood disorders at this point. Major depression, bipolar illness, any kind of mood disorder, anxiety, or generalized anxiety disorder. When we're looking at these, we are seeing increased levels here of gambling. When there's a mental health issue there, gambling goes up. We see high rates. It really comes out here with substance use as well. When we're looking at alcohol and other drug issues, we have 70% of them have been engaged in gambling issues. Illicit drugs, 40%. For substance use issues, we're up to almost 75%. Nicotine users are high gamblers. And I know that's really strange. What comes first, the gambling or the nicotine? We're not sure, but there's high comorbidity in both of them. And then antisocial personality disorder, they're pretty high, it's about 29%. What comes first, probably gambling or other disorder? Now, this slide I'm always really intrigued by is Stephen Henry West here, who is one of the leading researchers in the country on propaganda. And Henry talks about that we don't really know what comes first, the chicken or the egg, but we can say that with mood disorders, 65% of the mood disorders come first, 23% of the propaganda comes after the mood disorder. So what we're looking at is that gambling then is self-medication for the mood disorder. When we're looking at anxiety, it's even higher. The 82% of the anxiety comes first, and after that, 13% of the year may send it on. So they're self-medicating with it. But the impulse control disorders, 100% of impulse control disorders happen first, and then they can be able to self-medicate. And then substance abuse, the numbers are not as bigger. Power problem gambling can come first with substance abuse or substance abuse. They really are interchangeable. They really like each other. But what we're seeing is a lot of mental health issues, they're now starting to use problem gambling and self-medication just like they used to use drug and alcohol before. But since gambling is increasing in its availability throughout the state, we're seeing an increase of problem gambling and pathological gambling. Suicide is on the rise with gamblers. Gamblers have a 20% higher incidence of successful completed suicide than any other mental health issue. That is really scary because we don't see them when they reach their bottom. Because with substance abuse, if they're using, they can pass out or they're overdose or something will happen. With gambling, we don't see that. With gambling, we just see them disappearing a little bit, avoiding, getting laid off, showing incidents of bipolar possibly, or depression or anxiety, but we don't see the gambling. And so we don't see the devastation in their lives and the losses in their lives, the financial loss. We also see a higher occurrence of domestic violence happening the more they're in gambling, because they're so frustrated with the situation that they're having more financial issues, there's more arguments with this happening in the home, and so it's creating more domestic violence. Because we can blame it on the DV, and they don't have to address the gambling issue. So what we see is that we have three categories. We have gamblers are in the light blue, the purple is the alcohol and drug, and then both of them are this other light blue. Sorry, fix the colors as well. I should have. When we look at gamblers alone, 55% talk about being feeling that life is not worth living. When we're talking about alcohol, it's about 50%. But when we combine them the both together, it increases to about 75% talk about suicidality. Then we talk about suicidality, it goes down to about 70%. But this is the scary one. Gamblers alone without another issue, about 18% really offensive. 29% of alcohol and drugs, but when you combine the two together, it goes up to about 40%. That's a really high rate of suicidality and attempts when it comes to having gambling and drugs. This, and I'm going to give you an example of what this is. I'm going to give you a little bit of a piece, and I'll use myself, okay? Let's say I'm going into a casino and I want to gamble. I'm going to have some fun. I bring $20 in, I start gambling. I'm having fun with it. Guess what? I win $20 more. I got $40. I'm feeling really good. I feel like I'm the world. lose $20. Okay, that's all right. I'm feeling a little sad. But I can go back. I can win a little bit more. I'm going to go gamble a little bit more and get my money back. Okay, I lose another $20, $40. When I go back, I'm going to gamble a little bit more because I don't want to lose all the money. I was up to $80. I'm down to 20 now. That's my original 20. Okay, so I'm okay. So if I'm going to gamble my original 20. I'm going to go back and gamble a little bit more. And holy moly, I go back and I'm putting another 20 after that. And I'm putting another 20 after that. Now I'm 60 in a hole. And I'm feeling more crap. I can't believe I lost this money. That money was paying the light bill. I needed that to pay for the formula. I needed that to pay for my car note. I needed that to bring home. I can't show that I'm not bringing money home. So I got to go back and gamble a little bit more because I was winning before. I'm going to be okay. It's going to hit again. It hit before. I'm going to hit again. And so I go back and I'm getting more and more and more depressed. And every time I get depressed, my mood starts suffering. And I get more and more sad. And I gamble to escape that mood. So I'm feeling bad.
I would just like to say one thing is this about the power, just to maybe reframe an issue that we just touched on briefly, that self-exclusion, did you all understand that? That people can go and sign up and, well, if you have if you and or somebody in your family thinks that you have a gambling problem, you can go and do it either on the casino or to an agency that does that finds people as self-exclusion. You sign a agreement not to go on that casino.
Thank you very much. Okay, now we'll go back to our regular agenda. We've done the roll call, so is there any citizen input from the audience? Well, sure. We have some citizens in the audience.
The love goes away after the money's been distributed.
I guess. Well, hearing none, Peter, would you give us a CCDDB update? Do we have anything?
There really isn't anything right now. We're working on contracts, and, you know, that's, you know, basically there's some negotiation that we're doing related to primarily DSC is the agency that we're working with. We're doing a lot of contract negotiation with Community Elements related to the issues related to mental health and juvenile and criminal justice, and that's coming along nicely at this point. So that's where we are.
Thank you. The next agenda item is approval of the minutes from May 22nd, and we have to clap for Stephanie.
Exactly.
Nice job, Stephanie. You have a tape. No, seriously, I need a motion and a second.
Because I want to hurry up and get it approved so we don't go back.
All right. So Dr. Moore has moved to approve it. And we have 2 seconds. So does anybody have comments about it?
No.
No comments. So... all in favor of the minutes from May 22nd, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Tom's not voting.
Well, they are approved. Thank you. Number 6, President's comments. I have a brief statement just to thank our staff for all the work that they've been doing with all of the applications and working on the contracts. Peter and Mark and Lynn and Tracy and Stephanie and Nancy. Thank you very much. We appreciate it.
For in our board package, of course, we always hear about, we see the staff, but then there's a bunch of other staff that we really don't get to acknowledge, and clearly they're doing an outstanding job in keeping this organization going. So I think your comments are very appropriate here.
Well, keep the job going. We really appreciate it. Okay. Anybody? Well, we have staff reports. Did you want to elaborate on anything? Tracy, I guess, and Lynn. Mark's not here.
The only thing I wanted to share with the board is that I think it's July 15th. We will be undergoing another site visit, a federal site visit, and so this is our evaluation site visit where they come in and just look at systemically and structurally how we're set up and those types of things. So that will happen before our next board meeting, and just wanted to share that with the board.
Thank you, Tracy. Do you have anything, Lynn?
No.
Okay. Well, thank you. Now, do we have any board-to-board reports? Okay. We'll have Deb and then Julian. And do you have one, Ernie? Okay.
I don't know if you know, but I represent the board on the CAC, the Children's Advocacy Center, but it's not just because I raised my hand and said I wanted to do it. but we are required to be on that board. So as a member of the board, I participated in the process of choosing a new director. The new director was, in the end, chosen by Julia with recommendations from the rest of us. And so the new director is Adelaide Ames, I'm not quite sure. Does somebody know how to pronounce her name? Amy, thank you. She couldn't be here today for me to introduce her to you. She will come to the next meeting, and then I'll be able to introduce you to her. I think she'll do a wonderful job.
Thank you.
I just wanted to say that I have continued to go to the Access Coordinating Council meetings, and they're working on, among the other things they're working on is a question of sustainability, and that's the one that I've been at least paying attention to. I can't say I'm contributing anything at the moment, but I'm paying attention to it to try to understand what they're about. And they continue to have a good community-wide representation at these meetings. The other thing I wanted to say is that I think this is appropriate. I'm in the wrong category. Tell me.
Go right ahead.
I was this morning at a meeting. I've been attending regular meetings of the various police departments who are trying to work out their arrangements with, particularly with Community Elements, who was there also at this meeting. And I just want to commend, maybe this is a part, an extension of what Dr. Henry said. I want to commend this group, and particularly the Tracy, Peter Tracy, for his engagement in this, the whole question of mental health services for people involved with the criminal justice system. That resolution that we passed is getting widespread attention from people. They are really happy about it and feel like something's really happening here, and down to the level of policemen on the street who really have a difficult problem here. And I could see also change in the ways that the mental health services people are thinking and working with police. And I know Peter's been negotiating the details of the contract now, but I'm sort of proud to be a member of this group based on what I'm seeing. It's pretty hard to get observable changes. Now, it's mostly promise at this point, but it looks to me like it could be real. And I think the police are quite involved and appreciative of the help they're getting. So I just wanted to report that.
Can I just add something?
Yes, sure.
I just wanted to add something to what you said, and that is, I had a conversation with Bruce Spardini before the meeting started, and I would like to acknowledge that I see a real difference in terms of, Prairie Center and Community Elements. They're working together on this problem, it's really very nice to see. I know in this day and age it's difficult with the money situation and the competition and everything else, but it's really nice to see both of your agencies working so well together at this point.
Ernie?
Yes, I attended the Community Elements meeting, and it was an interesting change of venue. We met over at 801 North Walnut, where, if all things go according to plan, they will be moving to that. In other words, the agency on Park Street hopefully is going to be bought by a bank, and then which will enable them to use those resources to move over to 801 North Walnut. 801 North Walnut was the site, I believe, of the Department of Human Services some years ago. So it's an interesting building. You certainly see how the Department of Human Services worked. It kind of looked like cattle stalls. They happen. They open. There was rooms are not enclosed, but they're just things on the side. But at any rate, they have some some great plans to, yeah, cubicles. It's, yeah, they have some great plans to adapt that building, and it certainly will provide a lot of room for what they're doing. I also attended the meeting of the evaluation of the Access Initiative, and it was one of the interesting things about it. It's a very complex. I must admit, it's one of the more complex evaluation designs I've seen in a long time. But one of the neat things they're trying is, I know a couple of meetings ago you mentioned about, you know, kind of a coordinated system and the extent to which agencies are working in a coordinated system. And they actually have some way of measuring movement towards that. In other words, a system change movement, which I thought was quite interesting. And the other thing that was interesting about the meeting, a lot of the stakeholders were there. In other words, they're I think people are beginning to see that evaluation is something different than just, you know, making the feds happy so you get more money the next quarter. That they're beginning to see some kind of, I think it goes along kind of with your statement. It's just another measure of the extent of change in the community, of how it views programs, social programs, and not only just accomplishment of outcomes, but also the development of a system that is different and more responsive than what we've had in the past. It said it's an exciting time to be involved in all of this.
Thank you. Are there any more comments from board members? Okay. Do we have any agency information? I know Bruce, Marquitas, Patty. Anything? Okay. What about you, Julie? Okay. Now we move to the financial information. I need a motion and a second to accept the claims report for this.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved in second. Are there any comments or questions about it? Wow, that's easy. All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay, we've already done our new business, so now we're into the real important stuff, which is the 2014 budget. You've all had an opportunity to look it over, and you probably noticed that the access budget is not in this packet, and we should have it ready to go, I guess, in July.
Mm-hmm.
So at this point, I'll ask Peter to entertain any questions that you have about the budget before we call for a vote.
A couple things I should just mention. The county is changing its fiscal year to go from the December to November year to the regular calendar year. And so to make the shift, you'll notice this is a 13-month budget that we have. So that's why the numbers look a little odd this time. So that's one major point. The other thing, and this has to do, we have three budgets that we have to, actually four budgets that we have to approve. In addition to the Mental Health Board budget, we have the delinquency prevention grant budget, and which is we call the quarter cent, and also the drug court program budget. With regard to access, you know, that is such a complex program, and the process that Tracy's in right now is the reduction of, you know, as the money from the state and the feds is being reduced, they have to change that, and it's a very difficult process. It's a grueling process, and we plan to bring that back here in July. So with that, there were also, I think Eileen pointed out that there was an error. If you look at the drug court, it says the column to the far rights as FY13. That is supposed to be FY14. Yeah. Sure. Thank you for pointing
that out.
Thank
you, Eileen.
And with that, I guess we'll, are there any questions? Yes.
Yeah, one question. It's appointed officials and full-time employees. Percentage-wise, what was the increase in salaries?
3.5.
I move that this budget be approved as proposed.
A second? One other question? Okay.
I just don't know what it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's my first time I've looked at this.
Okay.
It's my first year here, so mm-hmm. I'm familiar with it. I just didn't know what professional fees.
Okay. Actually, if you would like, I can kind of go through all the lines.
No,
and it,
I just
okay.
Don't know what it,
professional fees is our consultation line. The PLL program, we pay the money that goes to Savannah Institute for the licensing fee out of that. We have a contract with Barb Bresner to do the expo, and that is included in that. The training that we did today, that was a $500 honorarium, would come out of that.
You don't have to go through the whole thing. I
yeah.
just didn't understand what it was about, but I now
yeah.
I know.
And just one other, I think someone asked this question, and you'll notice that we have the public relations line down. I should explain. That is that pays for the expo and also our anti-stigma activities, although we budget more because we always get money back, that is tied to gifts and contributions and different things like that. So. As you can see, most of our money is in the contributions and grants line, and that's the money that we have available to provide to make it community investments for services.
Do we have other questions? Okay, Stephanie, will you call the roll, please?
It hasn't been seconded.
All of it.
Yeah.
Yes.
But if you have questions about the other ones.
Okay.
Has my motion been seconded?
It was already moved in second, wasn't it? No. Or not? Okay. Sorry. It's been moved, and we need a second.
I thought Julian was going to second it, but then he had a question.
Okay.
Sorry. So just to be sure, I will.
You second it. Okay. Thank you for that reminder. So it's been moved in second that we accept the budget for 2014. So now, Stephanie, can you call the roll, please? This won't be a repeat, Stephanie.
Yes.
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 Thank you. Peter?
Just so, actually for you, Julian, since this is your first time through, we then will present the budget to the county and, you would know that because you did that with the Board of Health, didn't you? So, and we know now that we're going to be meeting with the county administrator about our budget in July. And in August, we will come to the county board meeting and present the budget, and that at that point, then it is hopefully approved by the county board.
Okay, thank you. Under old business, we have you can read the Disability Resource Expo that's in our packet. And I don't have any board announcements. Do any other board members have announcements?
I'm going to meet in July.
Question.
The question is, are we going to meet in July? And I think that we definitely need to meet because of to get the access budget approved.
Mm-hmm.
And we also usually talk about the anti-stigma budget also at that point. So I would recommend that we meet in July.
But not in August.
Not in August. August we take off, right.
So based on your schedules now, does it look like it'll be likely that most of the board members will be in town in July?
I will not.
Okay.
I will not.
What's the date? July
19th, I think.
Yeah. July 19th.
So that's just two of us.
July 17th, I'm sorry, yes, is the correct date.
So is it looking good for most people? Looks like we can
I do have a request. My birthday is on July 16th, so if you would like to sing happy birthday to me, it would be appropriate.
Okay. Okay. So we'll be back together on July 17th. So if there's no further business, been moved second that we're adjourned. Okay. So hearing no objections, we're adjourned. Thanks.